The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to the AEW Match Guide Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Brown. Thank you for joining me. We are looking at the top 10 of the definitive AEW Match Guide Podcast, Volume 2. In what's become something of an annual tradition here at the AEW Match Guide Podcast, of course, this whole concept was kicked off last year, back in 2021, when I'd got together a bit over 30 wrestling commentators from around the internet wrestling community, and we voted on what was the top 50 matches in AEW history from the first 2 years of AEW, from Double or Nothing 2019 up to Double or Nothing 2021. And we've done it again. If you've been looking at wrestling headlines or on my Twitter, you will have seen that we have announced 2 weeks ago, we announced 50 to 31 for Volume 2, and last week we announced 30 to 11. And tomorrow, we're going to be putting up 10 to 1. But to announce the matches that fell in that place today, you're joined by myself and my good friend, the Damn Implicat. He is a podcaster. He is a writer. He's a raconteur. He's a renaissance man. He is my partner in crime, and I'm very happy to have you along for the ride today, Imp. How are you going?
Damn! Here we are once again talking about the best matches as voted by somewhere between 40 and 50 different writers. There's an increase over last year, which is awesome to see. The more the merrier in this voting period, just to give a wider array of opinions with the really fancy spreadsheet in front of me.
You know the secrets that the people do not. You know the secrets. You got the special link.
Yeah, I got a special insider link to see the 85 different matches voted on, which is awesome. A wider array of people, a wider array of results. Yep. That's exactly what I want to see.
Yeah, exactly. Look, the reason that I originally wanted to put these together to give everyone a bit of an idea is that personally, I feel that the idea of star ratings, I feel that the idea of cage match, grapple, Dave Meltzer, they've got a lot of merit, and I give them merit by, you know, most of the time in my podcast when we're looking at a match, I will provide what they were. But I feel like there needs to be other ways of historically contextualizing what are the best matches, because both of those, the star rating system and cage match, I feel like, and this is my personal opinion, feel free to disagree with me, I feel like it favors a certain style of wrestling, and the people who rate on those sites favor a very specific style of wrestling that is not something that is for everyone. That's not what everyone wants to see in their wrestling. And so I wanted to find a way of getting a diverse group of writers together. And I'm very fortunate to have such a diverse group of people contributing to this and putting their thoughts in. And as Imp said, it's ended up with a really, really great list. We've done a top 50, of course. It's been published on Wrestling Headlines. There's actually 85 matches that got votes, that received votes. We had 42 people put in their votes. Up to 85 matches got votes. And this year was more diverse than last year. 11 matches got number one votes. Last year, there was only, I think, 5 matches that got number one votes, and of those matches, only 2 of them got more than one, whereas in this case, 11 matches got number one votes. 7 of those 11 matches got 2 or more, and we're going to be going through a lot of the ones that got multiple votes tonight when we talk about our top 10. And I wanted to give a shout out to, I can't go through everyone because it's 42 people, it's too many people. At the end of the articles on Wrestling Headlines, you can go to, there is a list of all the people. Jump onto their social media, follow them, listen to what they produce. A shout out to the people who did contribute, and particularly the people who have podcasts, they're podcasters, they're writers, talking about Social Suplex, of course, what I'm very lucky to be a part of. We've got multiple podcasts here. Imp Wrestling Headlines, that's who I used to write for when I wrote regularly, and of course still post on there every now and again. Wrestle In, Pro Wrestling Musings, Near Falls Media, Wrestle Purist, Eno Wrestling, This Is Awesome Podcast, Spandex Excellence, The White Hot Tag, Triple Friends Podcast, The Doc Says Podcast, and The Heel Truth Podcast. All of those guys are a great outlets that you should check out. Give it a listen. Give them 5 stars just because that helps. That helps everyone. but just give them a listen. They're all worth having a listen to. And I want to give those guys a big thank you before we get into the list. And before we get into the matches, because this list would not happen without them. I know I am the person who posts it. I'm the person who tallies the votes. I'm the person that does this podcast. But it's not just my list, and I don't want it to be just my list. I want it to be the list of the people, a list that anyone can come to. And if they're just getting into AEW, they're new to wrestling, looking at what are the best matches in AEW history, they can come to this list, and they can get a definitive match guide for All Elite Wrestling. I've given it the wind up. Before we get to the top 10, Imp, we have, of course, over the last 2 weeks, we've posted the top 50 from 50 to 11 on Wrestling Headlines. Just looking at what's shown up so far, I'm just keen to know from your perspective, what were some of the matches that have shown up so far that, you know, you were really happy to see made the top 50 or ended up a little bit higher than you might have expected it to be, that, you know, was exciting for you to see one of your favorites really getting up there and getting some appreciation.
I mean, for me, I absolutely love the PWG party style tag team match, which is on like every other week on Dynamite. It's awesome to see. I love those matches. They're such a blast. When it comes to pay-per-view, they're sometimes some of the best matches on the show. Like from Forbidden Door this past, whenever it was by the time this goes out. The
3 weeks ago.
Yeah, the six-man match with Sting, Darby Allin, and Shingo versus El Fantasmo and Yumba. I absolutely adored that match. It's one of my favourites on the show. I can't wait to revisit those. Like, for me to see those kind of awesome multi-man, really exciting and fun matches get onto these lists, like Adam Cole in the Bucks versus Christian Cage, Jungle Boy, Luchasaurus from Full Gear. Like the Super Elite versus Adam Page in the Dark Order. I love those matches like that. And to see them get not just on the list, but so high up the list as well. It's great to see that it's not just me that loves these kind of matches. I'm represented by the others.
I guess this is a promotion that was created as much by the Young Bucks as anyone else, so if you've got the Young Bucks, you're going to be getting that style at times, and I'm definitely with you. One of the ones that I noted down was the Super Elite versus Adam Page in the Dark Order. I was wondering if that would make people's top 15 because the match quality has been so high. When we get into the top 10, it is a list of matches that could be number one. There's lots of, like, the quality is so high, and I was wondering with that one, because it didn't end up being the consequential match that elevated Hangman. It was great, it was such a good TV production, but it didn't end up having him get that happy ending, and for some people at the time that felt like a bit of a letdown, so I was wondering if that wouldn't make it. But I love the presentation of it so much, particularly the entrances. Like, that is one of the best wrestling entrances I've ever seen, and so I was really excited when that one started moving up and up and up the charts. It ended up at 18th. So, yeah, I was really, really excited to see that. Really excited to see a lot of love for Eddie Kingston as well. He's just been at the end of this list. I'm going to give some stats about wrestlers that earned the most points. And Eddie Kingston is 6th on that list. And that includes tag teams. And that is he has got 6 matches in this list. He appears a lot in the top 20. And to see Eddie Kingston getting that, you know, a guy who was pretty much ready to retire, absolutely grabbed his one opportunity, his one shot with both hands, and has absolutely blown everyone away and is pretty much the heart of AEW at this point. Like, in terms of when you're talking about fan favorites, I don't think there's any, maybe Moxley and Eddie Kingston, you know, they're best friends and they're probably at the top. Although I suspect if Eddie Kingston and John Moxley ever had a feud, I suspect Eddie Kingston would be the one getting cheered, which is pretty crazy to think about. And then the last one, which is something that last year I knew setting things up, that Thunder Rosa versus Britt Baker was going to be right up there, their lights out match, because that was such a moment. But women's wrestling has continued to be a challenge for AEW. It's improved, I think it continues to improve. I think we are actually on a slow improve. It's taking its time, but you know what? Sometimes a good slow cooked brisket does take a bit of time. But I was really excited. I was really happy to see Serena Deeb and Hikaru Shida get recognized in this list. You didn't see it, but the street fight they had, that came in 51st. So it was very close to making the top 50. Their first match was also got votes, but their second match, I loved seeing that that came in and came in at 20th. So that was cool to see that it hit 20th. I think that's the best women's program they've done. It didn't necessarily get the attention. When it was on, it got a lot of attention, but between those periods of it being on, it was like it didn't exist, which is a bit odd. The fans recognize. They recognize the effort. They recognize the skill. I love the way that particularly the second match built on the first match. And I can't wait to deep dive into that match at some point because I think it's fantastic. I think it's the best in terms of just pure wrestling matches. I think it's the best women's wrestling match that they've had in AEW. And I was really happy that that came in 20th. So that they would be the ones that I was excited to see. Imp, this is where we get a bit more controversial potentially. For you, what is a match on this list that you think was maybe a little bit overrated?
Oh, oh, I mean, I don't have any strong opinions. I'm trying to look and just see if there was one that I just didn't get along with. Like the closest I come is probably Adam Page versus Adam Cole because I just didn't get into that match. However, yep. 29th is perfectly fine for that match. So it's not really controversial. Like, I'd never put it in my top 10. I didn't vote for it on my list. And those of you that did, some of you put it top 10. Like, no.
Yeah.
But 29th overall, actually, you know what? That's perfectly fine for it. For me, that's a solid placing for it.
Yeah, look, that wasn't... I kind of soured on Adam Cole quite a bit. That match wasn't the reason why. Like, that was actually a pretty good match. It wasn't a blowaway. And no one went really high on it. The highest vote it got was 5th, then 10th, and then most of the votes for it came in 12th, 13th, 14th, 15th. It got, you know, a few people mentioning it who obviously enjoyed it and enjoyed the feud. It was a pretty decent feud, you know, and Adam Page was fantastic in it. Adam Cole was also really good in it. I didn't have a problem with where that ended up. The reason I brought it up was because... Let's move on to number 10, and this is the one that I think was overrated because just getting literally the final votes that came in ended up with number 10 and number 11 swapping places. Number 11 is Eddie Kingston versus Bryan Danielson.
These ladders are tough to work with. They're inanimate objects.
Well, remember, that was the ladder that Cody suplexed Sammy on. The structural integrity is now questionable. As Cody's finding out, he's making the climb.
Sammy's going to have to... Sammy!
At least 10 feet, maybe 12. The cutter was perfectly executed. The fans here going crazy.
Number 10, Cody Rhodes versus Sammy Guevara. The ladder match from Dynamite Beach Break, January 26, 2022. It got 159 points. Its highest vote was 3rd. And as I said, literally the last votes that I put in ended up with this one scraping into the top 10. So when I was telling people to get in there and vote because it would make a difference, I wasn't mucking around. Of course, we're going to potentially criticize matches a little bit at different points, but we're talking about levels of greatness at this point. All of the matches that we're talking about are fantastic, and we are splitting hairs because we're talking about the best of the best. What did you think? I've nailed my colors to the mast. That I didn't think this should have been 10th necessarily. But what did you love about it?
Well, I was one of three people that voted this 9th as well. So this was in my top 10. And I absolutely love this match. So first off, ladder matches are 100% my thing. Especially when it's one of those where it's upping the ante in terms of the kind of stunt that they're doing. And Jesus Christ, this match. Yes, it is the one with that cutter from Sammy. Absolutely love. Like, I loved the Sammy Guevara versus Scorpio Sky follow-up to this, and just the way that they played off of the big, awesome ladder springboard cutter in that one as well. So this kind of match is just up my street. This really is for me. I absolutely love the flow of this match. It's just that thing in the back of your head that Cody might win, because at that point, he's still solidly AEW. No one's believing he's leaving for WWE at this point. WrestleMania's months away. It's not a thing. So it just feels like, oh, he could win though. He's done his whole thing. He's kind of floating about. And that really helped paint Sammy Guevara as a huge babyface because he wasn't Cody. My times have changed from here till where we are now. But at that moment, anyone who was facing Cody Rhodes who wasn't Cody in a match like this, they were getting huge, huge cheers. And Sammy Guevara was that guy. He felt like an absolutely huge babyface to take the TNT Championship forward. And this match did so much to elevate him there. And insane stunts. Absolutely insane.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is the match where Sammy did something where he just landed really awkwardly and it felt, oh God, is this... I can't remember if this is this one or the Scorpio Sky match. I can't remember what he did. He did something and I remember which went into an ad break like, is he okay? The crazy person, what's he done? And that might have been like a 630 off the top of a ladder or something.
I think you're talking about that was the Scorpio Sky
match. Ah, that was Scorpio Sky match, yeah.
Landed on his head, jumping off the... doing that.
Right, he didn't do that in this, yeah, because he didn't do that in this match then. So this match is higher rated than that.
He still had a really rough looking bump off a ladder on the outside as well. Because everyone remembers the cutter, of course, but there was another like really rough looking bump off a ladder outside. I think he went onto another ladder or into a table for that. One thing I love about that AEW has done with ladder matches is they've gotten rid of the stupidly slow climb.
Oh, yes.
And it's they're not exactly like, of course, they're not necessarily springing up ladders like, you know, they're still selling a little bit, but they're not, you know, barely managing to climb one rung every 10 seconds, you know, in a ludicrously slow display of like aching out the drama. And this is a good and that requires being able to like going up the ladders more quickly requires great timing from the two of them. Otherwise, you end up with someone at the top of the ladder where they should be grabbing the belts, kind of just waiting, and that's a never a good look. And this match was structured really well to avoid things like that. You know, the one time you had Cody up the top and no one around him was the time where Sammy jumped out of nowhere and did this insane cutter that, you know, is something that will probably be in Dynamite trailers and things like that for the next 10 years. Like, it was just a mental, absolutely mental spot. And everyone who has commented on, because the commentary bits haven't been posted on Wrestling Headlines for this, but every single person mentions that cutter. And of course, at the end of this, Sammy did look like, he looked fantastic. And he looked like a huge star with the two belts, holding the two belts. You know, and I feel like the build to this wasn't the greatest. You know, Cody was like kind of that final promo he did was, it was almost like he was, in hindsight now, you can kind of see that he was trying to remind TK. It was almost like he was trying to remind TK of the feuds that he could have if he got re-signed. Like, you know, give me a bit more money and I'll do it. Like, there's these things on the table that we can do. But that, you know, that sort of detracted from it. And you had like the weirdness with them, you know, crowning an interim champion when I think Sammy was only out for 1 week or something, or no, Cody was only out for 1 week. That's right. So Sammy lost to Cody and then Cody was out and Sammy beat Dustin that week. And then like literally a week later, Cody's back and they're setting up this unification match. And it's kind of like, wow, this is all happening a bit too quickly. But yeah, the actual match itself completely blow away. And as you said, incredible spots. And also an interesting legacy thing, because it's Cody's farewell match. Like, it's the last match he ever did in AEW. It's the only match that made this list for Cody Rhodes. So, yeah, it's an interesting one to have as his final beat, I guess.
I just love the story that Cody's first match in AEW got those Meltzer 5 stars. And his last match in AEW also got the Meltzer 5 stars. Like, kicking it off and ending in absolute style. And of course, the fact that both he and Sammy were on these runs where the fans were just against them. It's interesting in legacy in that way, where Sammy essentially got Cody's booking to take on the American top team. And it backfired again. It was like, no. Yeah, it turns out the idea was just bad. This wasn't, oh, this is all Cody's fault. No. Both times, the same story turned the baby faces into heels. Both times. It says everything.
Yeah, when you've got like when you've got Dan Lambert getting face pops, like you just, you know, you're off in ridiculously poor booking territory at that point. Like, you need to change course.
To say how much of a babyface Sammy was coming out of this, you know that they did wrong. And then Tony Khan doing the America's Favorite Couple, that didn't help. Complete mystery.
Let's say about that better. Let's let's move on. That was number 10. We've got 10 matches to go through, so we're gonna have to get a run along. But so number 10, Cody versus Sammy Guevara, TNT title ladder match from Dynamite Beach Break on January 26th, Australia Day, actually.
Call it Excalibur.
BTE Trigger!
Yeah, baby!
And now the double kick!
Number 9, The Young Bucks versus FTR from Dynamite, April 6th, 2022. The second match that these two had had. It had 181 points, got 24 votes, and its highest place was second. Most people felt at the time this was better than their first. For me, I feel like probably just helped that they had a crowd, like they had a large crowd, as much as anything else. Of course, different alignments to the first match that they had, where you've got the FTR sort of really having this. This was when they were really starting to hit their straps in this new face role that they'd got, where these, you know, they're just these fighting, hardworking grifters and grafters, I should say, not grifters.
Grifter.
At the Young Bucks, of course, still in peak pisshead mode, I might say. What did you think of this match and how it compares to their first one?
I think what also helps it is it's on that same week that they had the Briscoes match, and then they come to the end of the week and they're on Dynamite having this absolute banger as well within, 4 days of another match that you could tell just in Ring of Honor. It's like, oh my God, this was absolutely fantastic. I myself voted it 10th. Again, one of two people. That's what I say. Did me and these other people just vote the same? But yeah. Yeah, for me, this was top 10 as well. I ummed and ahed about where to put this in my top 10, and it moved about all over the place, but it was always there. As I remembered about how much I enjoyed other matches, it just moved about. But I absolutely adored this. For me, AEW bringing back tag team wrestling to the level that they have done, it's so great to see. Like, consistently now on our list that we're doing, we're getting more than one tag team match in the top 10. And there's tag team matches all over the list. There's tag team matches all over the top. It's great to see. I absolutely adored the flow of this match. As you were saying, the complete switch in dynamic from the last time we faced them. The fact that the Young Bucks are now the dastardly heels and FTR are plucky baby faces. It's like, our grifters, as you accidentally called them. I love seeing the dynamic of this one. And as you said, for me, it is the crowd. That's what lifts and elevates this one over their previous one. Just doing the same stuff, just reverse roles, and have the crowd really feed off of it. It was a dynamite match.
Yeah. I think it's funny how when the match, of course, was envisioned between these two teams originally, back when they sent that message, the Revival were a heel act, and so of course everyone imagines this as what their alignment was in their first match, where you've got the Revival as these heels cutting off, you know, the Rock and Roll Express, these high impact, high speed Young Bucks. But in many ways, it actually works better. And this felt more like their own match with them in this alignment, which is so odd that that's the way it's worked out. But it just so happens that, you know, the Young Bucks are incredible heels. And as good as FTR are as heels, it seems like outside of WWE, they work best as faces, as like these fiery southern faces. And I think removing, you know, the first match had all those tribute spots, which were very meticulously worked in and were cool moments. But removing those made this feel like, that was like the first match was a tribute to wrestling. This was their match. This was the FTR and Young Bucks match. And I think putting this in where it was, because the one critique I would have is that there wasn't really any build to this beyond just FTR being absolutely red hot from that match with the Briscoes, and the Young Bucks having such a history in Ring of Honor and being like, what, you guys think you're like the spiritual Ring of Honor champions right now. We've held those belts like 20 times. But I think giving them that match then, it really solidified FTR for the fact they're on a hot streak because they won. They beat the Bucks, which was the biggest loss they'd had at that point. And it also set up another meeting down the line, which would have more of a build. And I think that we're moving towards, it seems like it's obvious that that's what we're moving towards. And it's going to be such a huge thing. And, you know, I feel like this one, as good as it is coming in ninth, it's like just whetting the appetites, you know, just whetting it a little bit. Just giving us a taste, just a little taste of what can potentially come. And I'm really happy this came in ninth. Another interesting aside, this is the second highest rated tag team match on the countdown. Last year, there was tag team matches all throughout the top 10. So it's interesting how singles matches have become more dominant in this year, in this volume of the definitive AEW match guide.
Yeah, I love to see it. I love to see it. Just the fact that you really felt it last year of AEW elevating tag team wrestling to being important and being this huge thing. And then this year, it's been elevating the singles competition, like putting on absolute classics in the singles division. I mean, they were doing that for the last list, but this year, it really feels like they've upped the ante.
Yeah, well, but without sacrificing tag teams as well. Yeah. Like, even though we're about to get into a bunch of singles matches and one more tag team match. I think the listeners who listen will know the other tag team match that's probably going to come up. I don't think it's sacrificed tag team wrestling for the expense of singles, but there's been some real big time singles matches. But before we get to real big time singles matches, we're actually going to get to one that was a real shocker. This one was the underdog that could, this match. The one, number eight.
Yuta. Paradigm here. Oh. Paradigm shift! High angle paradigm shift! One, two. Oh my God, Yuta kicks out again!
You've got to be kidding me now! He's mouthing and Moxley is with that rear choke.
He's got his back now. Moxley.
And it was actually recorded the same night. So the people who went to Dynamite and Rampage tapings on April 6th, my God, they got an incredible night of wrestling because number eight was also recorded at that broadcast on Rampage, April 8, 2022. Number eight, John Moxley versus Wheeler Yuta. This is the underdog that did well. The come from behind story, you know, like every single other match in this top 10. And even really, like if you look back at entire almost top 20, it's all matches that had a lot of effort put into the build of them, you know, had big time presentation, particularly this top 10 and all the matches above this one, you know, real big name teams involved and big presentation put off to be like, it's setting up for, this is going to be a big deal sort of style of match. Whereas this one, it's a match that like you don't realize is going to be so good until you're halfway through it. At first, you see John Moxley versus Wheeler Yuta. They've wrestled before. They've had good matches. This will be fun. Wheeler Yuta's got this thing where he's trying to join the Blackpool Combat Club. And, of course, John Moxley is part of that. And you know that Wheeler Yuta's going to be fired up. But you don't know how special this match is going to be until, like, you're halfway through. And the crowd's, like, on their feet starting to really get behind Wheeler Yuta. He starts to get a bit bloody. He starts to really fire up. And, man, the heart and fire of Wheeler Yuta in this match, the like brute force nature of John Moxley's offense and the aggression that John Moxley shows and then the aggression in response by Wheeler Yuta is just incredible. I was so excited to see this match come in so high. I voted it also eighth. So I landed on it perfectly where this should be. Yeah, look, Imp, what do you remember of this match? What are your thoughts on it coming in at eighth?
For me, the image I have in my head is Wheeler Yuta with the crimson mask screaming as he tries to make John Moxley submit with the, I think it was the crossface he had on. It was like,
with the bulldog choke.
Bulldog choke, that was it, yeah. And it was like, oh, just that image was absolutely exceptional. It's putting into the image of John Moxley's words where he was feuding with Danielson. It's like, I'm not friends with someone until I bleed with them first. And then he had that match with Danielson. But afterwards, when they were name-dropping all the different young talent, you were ready, you were set up. You'd had Moxley's line, you've had them dropping the talent names. You're waiting for that moment where that young talent really tries to prove themselves against them and has that match where they bleed with them to cause that alignment, to get that trust from Moxley. And my God, did they play that to absolute perfection. Just the way that they put all of their words into that visual, into the match. It all fed into it. And Wheeler Yuta was doing absolutely everything to prove himself. Like, no, I can beat you, even though he's this massive underdog just getting the crap beaten out of him. He doesn't care that he's absolutely covered in blood. He's going to keep fighting and really prove himself and get into this stable. After, like, I think, was it the week previously when Regal just slapped him across the face? I think.
Yeah. So he had the match with Danielson. Actually, no, I think they had a tag match first. And afterwards, he was with the Best Friends and he left the ring and he sort of came back in and made his intention clear, almost, that he was going to be into this, and Regal slapped him. I think maybe Danielson had a match with him after that, and then this match happened and it was like, okay, you're in. But I think the magic of this match really hit when Yuta started using Danielson and Moxley's moves against them, because it was like him saying, I am going to new places now. Like, I'm going beyond what I've ever done before, and I'm going to use these moves that, like, these tough bastards that I want to be. I want to be these guys, and I am so much wanting to be them that, like, in the middle of this match, when I've used everything I've got, I'm just going to start doing what they do. And he starts, like, doing the elbows, and then he does the cross face, the lapel lock, and then, of course, yeah, my favorite shot as well as yours is just him screaming with blood dripping down his face with Moxley in the bulldog choke. It was interesting how this one came along, because I remember live reports at the time putting this match over and saying, like, this match is something else, like, you've got to watch Rampage, and then just being blown away by it. And I love a match that does that, where, like, you go in not expecting it to be so incredible, and it just blows you away.
Oh, it was absolutely exceptional. And I love matches that contain, like, all of the character beats as well, that really propel on to, like, that next stage, which is why I voted for Super Elite versus Hangman Page and the Dark Order in my top 15. Is that I really love those kind of matches, and this had that in absolute spades. Like, you could see after this match, the trajectory for Wheeler Yuta had completely changed. Like, he was a completely new man.
I mean, I hope Wheeler Yuta needs to buy John Moxley all of the non-alcoholic beers he ever can, because literally, like, John Moxley made this guy's career. Not that Wheeler Yuta wasn't doing well. Wheeler Yuta was doing well, but yeah, if you looked at, like, a trajectory for his career, if it was on a line graph, it hit a different angle after this match. So, coming up, let's move on to number 7. Number 7, CM Punk versus Eddie Kingston from Full Gear 2021. It ended up with 229 points. It had 22 votes and 3 people voted it as number 1. This is a really cool match that goes for like 12 minutes and is just a great example of why you don't necessarily need to have quantity in a match for it to be quality. This whole program was like maybe three segments in the ring. And that weird thing they did in the parking lot where Eddie Kingston was, like, running at CM Punk. And then the match.
Oh, I loved that.
And it became, within 3 weeks, like, one of the most heated feuds that this company has ever had. And one of the most intensely violent matches this company has ever had without using weapons. Which is saying something, given that, you know, we just talked about John Moxley versus Wheeler Yuta. What do you think of this match, Jim?
Oh, I absolutely adored it. I put it number 7. Which is exactly where it finished. Yep. So this couldn't have been absolutely perfect placing for me. It's exactly where I put it on my own list. Oh, like, it's one of the, I love matches where just in the building, the aura just shifts as both guys look like they just want to kill each other. This is like that graphic of Eddie King. I mean, over this past year, we've had 2 graphics. One of the matches isn't going to be on this list because it was at Double or Nothing. But there's the graphic of Eddie Kingston addresses his enemies, which is just perfect. And there's the image that came from Double or Nothing from the Anarchy match where he's dripping in blood with the gas can. It's just like, oh my God, Eddie. But just when that aura shifts where he and Punk are just dead eye at each other, completely serious, no pandering to the crowd, just absolutely, I'm going to kill this man. And both of them having that look on them. And it's just, you could sense it in the arena, just that kind of, I liken it in a way to, I guess Tomohiro Ishii versus Katsuyori Shibata from the G1 Climax. Yeah, where they're just stomping their feet. Yeah, they're stomping their feet. The arena is also doing the same thing, and they're clapping their hands, ready for them to just charge at each other. It's like, man, that's what this match was. That set the tone. That this match was them just charging at each other, trying to beat the crap out of each other. And they both sold it so well, like, so believable. Like, selling that this wasn't a wrestling contest, this was just a fight. And I absolutely adored it.
Even just the promo beforehand, like, it felt different. You know, you have a lot of times where you'll have, like, two people saying they don't like each other. You know, like, Sammy Guevara and that's the worst feud that AEW probably had this year, is the high profile, at least. It was like the top team versus Guevara or top team versus Cody. Like, you know, they're saying they hate each other, they don't like each other, they're flipping each other off and stuff. But it just feels so completely like nothing when you compare it to these two, like, getting in each other's faces and getting heated. That promo, like the in-ring promo set thing they had, where they got in each other's faces and, like, they're just staring at each other and then they had a brawl and it felt like a fight. And then when they had this actual match, it, as you said, it just feels like a fight. A few little small things I'll just mention that I love from it. CM Punk wearing the fight shorts. He's wearing the little fight shorts, which, you know, puts over again that, like, this is something different to him. He hasn't worn them since. I'm looking forward to the next time he brings them out, because, like, when he brings them out now, it's like, oh, well, it's going to be on. Because this is the little things that CM Punk loves to think about. And, you know, you've just got two masters of controlling the crowd and controlling the emotion of the crowd. And they didn't mind that Eddie Kingston was getting a face ovation. And CM Punk, even though he was just returning, like, he leaned into, like, being this, like, more arrogant and intolerant form of himself, because he just, in his character, he just can't stand Eddie Kingston. Like, these two people just can't stand each other, and they haven't been able to stand each other since. Like, you know, even though they're arguably the two top faces for the promotion, they hate each other. Every time that, like, there's a mention of them, CM Punk will be on commentary and just out of nowhere it will just be like, yeah, I like everyone except for Eddie Kingston. Eddie Kingston, when CM Punk won the world championship, he tweeted, yuck. Quote tweeted CM a photo of it and just said, yuck. Like, they're the two most popular faces of the company, but they hate each other and they never... And I love that. Like, you love to see it because it's, like, such formed-out characters and such fleshed-out characters. And, you know, another really interesting thing, Eddie Kingston's form at Full Gear, the year before this, he had, like, almost a same kind of feud with John Moxley, where obviously the result's different, where now they're friends. But, you know, you had, like, 3 weeks where they built this incredibly heated and incredibly intensely personal match that ended in, like, a match that was really violent, really emotional, and Eddie Kingston ended up losing. But, you know, that's something that Eddie Kingston does so well, is lose, but still remain angry and bitter, and refusing to respect his opponent, which he's, you know, so far refused to respect CM Punk, and I don't see that changing anytime soon.
Oh, Eddie Kingston does not let grudges go. No. Like, it's not a thing. And the only man he kind of had was John Moxley, but that was when he was faced with the realization that John Moxley might be blown up at Revolution. Yeah. It gets to that level. It was like, oh, okay, this person might be dead. Now I might maybe forgive them. Yeah. And only John Moxley. I was like, oh, I love it.
Well, I mean, Moxley approaches Eddie Kingston in a very different way to CM Punk, because John Moxley approaches him being like, mate, I love you. Like, I don't... I still respect you. Like, I don't want to have to do this to you, but we're going to have to because I'm the champion. And whereas CM Punk's like, no, mate, I can't stand you. You're an absolute failure. You've got no, you know, the same things Danielson said. Like, you've got no discipline. You should have, like, you're someone I can't stand because you should have been bigger than what you are. But because of your own personal failings, you've done that and you've blamed other people and you've got so many excuses and I'm not going to hear any of them. It's a very different a very different attitude when it comes to Eddie. But yeah, I hope they revisit this down the line sometime, because it could be a cracker of a match, and a cracker of a
I absolutely I cannot wait. And of course, we're seeing it still. Eddie Kingston is just, how many enemies does this man have? Like, blood feud. It's just, we're getting, immediately setting up the next one in the Blood and Guts match that's recently aired. Yep. It's like, oh man, like, good God.
Yep.
Yeah.
He's had, he's had these kinds of matches with Jericho, these Jericho, Danielson, like Miro, these are matches that all ended up in this, Miro versus Eddie was at 22. You've got Danielson versus Eddie at 11. Real high profile things for this guy, as I said, who wasn't even part of the interesting thing is, he could have been part of the original AEW intake, because he was on NWA Power. He wasn't locked in to a big wrestling, he wasn't locked into a big wrestling promotion in 2019 when AEW started, but they passed on him until he, had one opportunity, and he made himself undeniable. I down the line, who knows where he's going to end up, but we should move on. That was number 7 on the list, and we're moving on to number 6.
What the hell?
What an asshole.
Another intensely heated personal feud with some incredible promos. We've got CM Punk versus MJF, the dog collar match from Revolution 2020. This one ended up with 281 points, 31 people voted for it, and it had 2 first place votes. So this was one of the best feuds that I've ever seen in wrestling. What did this do to you? What emotionally, what did this program and this match do to you?
Oh, Matt, just the journey they took us on this, where MJF was coming out of the hot feud with Darby Allin, where it was like 2 of the 4 pillars proving themselves. He proving that he can wrestle, that he can go against Darby Allin. Then he enters the CM Punk feud. Like, oh my God, just from the get-go, because he had the momentum as well to go after Punk. It felt like the right time to do it. The absolute journey they took us on. Just from your kind of standard, here's the applauded veteran and here's the dickhead heel. It's like, and they both play those roles for a little bit, but it really escalates with the escalation and the journey they took us from there. For the absolute peak being when MJF just honestly opened up about being bullied as a kid. And CM Punk, his reaction to it, it's so perfect. Where he just comes out and honestly, just dropping all of the acts, just like, is that true? Is that true? And MJF just walks out, and it's, oh my God. The sheer emotion in that moment, it was elevated this. But I mean, it was already really high because the other promos they'd done. But this was, that was something else. Just that moment of reality and honestness just really, really lifted things up. Just that you have that moment, but you also understand why they've then got to then also have this dog collar match. As in, he opens up when it's too late. As in, they're already at blood feud level when that happens. Mm. It's like, oh, it's just, there's so much, like, you fully understand why MJF has to do what he has here. And you understand why Punk also has to do the same as well. It, for me, the best villains have a point. It can't just be Stephanie McMahon coming out and going, I'm a baddie, I do bad things, hey. It's like, no, yes. Oh, this has so much depth to it. To a point where when Punk's beating the crap out of him, like, there's a little bit in the back of your head where you kind of feel sorry, but MJF does such a good job in this match that you hate his guts regardless. It doesn't matter.
Yep.
All of that sympathy out the window. Who cares? Beat the crap out of him, Punk. And it's always... I love the flow of this match. And another one where, character-wise, it hits all of the beats and the trajectory it sends MJF on for the next or however long. I mean, to be fair, MJF's gone from perfect feud to perfect feud for I don't know how long at this point.
At least, well, the Jericho-MJF one had its hits and misses.
Oh, yeah.
But certainly, it ended on a high with the 5 labours. Then you had the Darby Allin feud. then this, and then Wardlow. Like, that's an incredible streak. And Punk himself as well. Like, he's coming out of this Eddie Kingston feud we talked about, which kind of came out of the Darby Allin. Like, he's hitting hard as well. And I loved, yeah, as you said, like the story they took us on, where their first interaction, they were doing, like, you know, the sort of thing we'd expect from these two, where they're, you know, doing those shoot style things, they're insulting each other. You know, it's like The Rock and John Cena going back and forth insulting each other. But then they went deeper, like after MJF won that match that they had in Chicago, which, you know, like that came in 15th. So, you know, there's a lot of people who voted for both the match that was in the initial match in Chicago, and then on Dynamite, and then also this match, which speaks to the quality of the in-ring work. But also, they then took it to like a more personal level, where they're like starting to peel back the layers of who they are. MJF is revealing, like, actually, you know, one thing they did before that, which I should mention, is they set up the Long Island, like,
oh yes,
Long Island, like, mirror world that exists now in AEW. Oh, where MJF's like the biggest hero of the company, and everyone boos CM Punk. but then of course they, like, as we said, like, they took us into who MJF is, and then of course you've got CM Punk starting to question himself and being like, am I the bad guy in this feud? And then of course it ultimately revealing in, like, you know, for a week people are like, are they about to do a double turn? And then they didn't. And in, like, brilliant go-home fashion, they both came out wearing white at Daly's place and just got blood everywhere, and then had this match, which was absolutely incredible. Like, from the minute they had the fake-out that people were saying MJF should do at the first dance, they play CM Punk's song, and then MJF comes out. And then CM Punk comes out to Misery Cantara by AFI, and the lights dim, and I'd never seen this entrance before. There was just some insane, absolutely batshit insane talk around this about, like, oh, people couldn't understand. It's like, who cares? It, like, felt like such a big deal because the lights go down. There's this spotlight. CM Punk's comes out wearing black and white, and there's black and white lights, and there's this really emotive song. And then, of course, you've got the match, which was just really, really intensely violent. You've got MJF trying to escape at first and realizing, oh, wait, I am literally tethered to this guy by my neck. I can't. And having to fight back. And then working around dog collar matches could be really difficult, particularly when you're working around the ropes and stuff, because you've both got to go through the same rope. And there were times where they, like, you could see they kind of had to flick things around. But it didn't matter because the emotional stakes and the emotion in the match was so high that it didn't matter that there was, like, little moments of awkwardness with the chain, because you were so wrapped up in the action that it didn't matter. And of course, you've got the ultimate, you've got a brilliant usage of thumbtacks, and the ultimate payoff of the Dynamite Diamond Ring with Wardlow, who has been, like, so abused by MJF, ultimately costing him the match, and giving CM Punk the Dynamite Diamond Ring, and CM Punk clocking MJF with it to finally be the first face to finally get that little bit of comeuppance on MJF with the Dynamite Diamond Ring, clocking him in the face, knocking him into the thumbtacks, and getting the win that way.
I just loved in the build as well that they were bringing up hints of, like, Roddy Piper and...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, just
Be letting... My Valentine.
Yeah, yeah.
Be My Valentine promo on Valentine's Day.
Yeah. Like, come on. It worked very well. It was just letting... For the fans who know... This is what I like about AEW. For the fans who know, there is such a deep meaning. But for the fans who don't, it's still cool, and you can see the reaction from the crowd. Like, you can see what it means. Like, this is a big deal. The fact that they were hitting on... This is the kind of match we're going to have, guys. And it's just that talk. It's just like, for somebody like me, where I remember watching that Starrcade show and not really being taken by anything. Then Piper and Valentine came out. And suddenly I'm like, oh my God, this is fantastic. This is amazing. Mm. I just had that vision of both Valentine and Piper, like rabid dogs, like, putting on the chains. And they're ready to launch at each other. This was a feud with so much depth in there, just laying that groundwork of, this is the kind of match you're going to expect, guys. And it's exactly what we got. And it was MJF's comeuppance moment. He has such a fantastic singles record that you could just see it. It's like, well, yeah. Maybe he does take out Punk because he's so well protected in terms of wins and losses. Yeah. MJF doesn't lose. that's the thing why he's such a good dickhead villain. Because he could continue to not lose until he goes for the title. But in him being so protected, suddenly he's okay to lose. Oh, it's it's a dynamic that works so damn well. Because you know he's going to be protected afterwards and he can build him back up, so the loss isn't the end of the world. And it was exactly what was needed to elevate Punk from having these solid stories into a true title contender. Absolutely
this
fantastic.
This was like the Eddie Kingston was CM Punk getting out of like Welcome Home. You know, like that was him getting back into pro wrestling properly. And it was like, I'm getting in a proper story. And then this was him like being like, okay, now I've done a 400 meter run. I'm going to run a half marathon. And man, absolutely nailed it. One thing I will just point out, because you mentioned little details, and I'll shout out Michael Sidgwick from What Culture, actually. He noticed in like December, there was this moment where they like CM Punk like grabbed MJF's scarf and there was like this brief tussle. And he said he saw that and he immediately said they're going to have a dog collar match at some point. And turned out to be right. And it's like just the little things.
I love
man.
That.
AEW is a treat for wrestling nerds like you and me. And we need to move on. We could talk about that. We will have a podcast at some point to talk about all that. Where we'll talk for more than an hour probably. So keep listening to the podcast. Keep subscribed to the podcast if you... You know, you want us to go deeper and deeper on these things. Let's move on to number five.
Danielson's avoided two previous times.
Oh, not inside out. Guts and prayer to guts and all.
Yes.
And the champion
Adam Page versus Brian Danielson. AEW World Championship match from Dynamite, January 5th, 2022. Their second match received 283 points. 28 people voted for it and it got 2 first place points. This was the first match they did on TBS. It was a follow-up to their hour-long draw that they did about a fortnight earlier, 3 weeks earlier. 2 points, actually, between this and the CM Punk one. So very close once again. Imp, what did you think of the second Adam Page and Bryan Danielson match?
I also voted this fifth. Just, again, it's just this list is just almost my top ten. Just a couple matches switched around. And, oh, yeah. At this point, we're talking... I mean, we have been for the whole top 10. These are all Match of the Year contenders. They're all absolutely fantastic. Like it. So for me, when I was voting on this list, it was just personal preference. Which matches do I absolutely love the most, I guess?
Yeah.
It's just... Because every single one of these matches are amazing. They're fantastic. But this was an absolutely... It was the best way to follow up for me and just, like, put a kind of cap on what had come before. Oh, they... Because Adam Page was a new champion, you always felt like it was certain that he was going to win. But because it was Bryan Danielson, and he'd come in so white hot and was having such fantastic matches, and he was, like, the veteran guy. Like, he felt like he was... Yep. Like, the way he carried himself in these matches, it always felt like he was the guy who thought he should always be in control. And it was Adam Page fighting back as this new champion, as this almost unproven to Danielson. In the way that they were carrying out the matches. And this was Adam Page proving himself as champion. This was the match that he finally did it. I loved how it built just to that moment. Of this was the match where Adam Page proved himself as champion. And because obviously he proved himself on the road to it. But it's a whole different thing. Was like, well, now you've got to have these kind of matches. And the fact that this was the match that solidified it. But Ryan Danielson, again, we talked about Moxley deserving all the non-alcoholic beers. Same goes out to Ryan Danielson in terms of how he elevated Adam Page. Adam Page was a made champion after this. There's too much to talk about, and if I try to think of specific spots, I'm definitely confusing it because there's two... This is like a... We talked about a marathon. Like, these two matches were a marathon, and it all kind of bleeds together in one awesome spectacle. The Wang Man cometh. It was amazing.
I love sequel wrestling when it shows that the wrestlers learnt from previous issues. So like one really cool example is from probably the greatest pro wrestling feud in modern times, Okada and Omega, where you've got, they have their first match, of course, their second match goes to a draw, and then their third match is in the G1, and they've got half an hour after going to a 1 hour draw, and Kenny Omega just blitzkriegs Okada, and I love the psychology of that, and I love that they did that in this match as well. Like, these guys immediately go at each other after, you know, going for an hour draw. they're like, okay, well, we've got to change up strategy. I've got to do as much damage as possible, as quickly as possible. You know, it still took them over half an hour to sort their stuff out. And it was a great, you know, another great match. Great finish as well. And I love that it's just so clean and so decisive as well. Even though Danielson's a huge star, it was Project Adam Page and absolutely succeeded. I think we should probably move along quickly to the next one because...
Danielson doesn't see it coming. Hangman, butt shot, lariat, bang!
Gotta cover, gotta cover
the bell!
Ladies and gentlemen, the time limit has expired. This match is a draw.
Coming in at number four, Adam Page versus Bryan Danielson, AEW Championship match from Dynamite, the 15th of December, 2021. So their hour-long draw. And we can kind of talk about both of them in together, I guess. But just to get the specifics, this one, 356 points. So a bit of a jump from the previous one. Got 29 votes and four first place votes. We actually reviewed this on your podcast. For those of you who don't follow him, Imp has a... at this moment, sporadic results, but at one point he was reviewing Dynamite straight after, well, within 24 hours of Dynamite's happening, and we actually reviewed this match. I love this one. This was great. I think this came in third on my list, and I love the psychology of it, where Danielson comes in like so full of confidence after, you know, going toe-to-toe with Omega, and I think he thinks in his mind he was just a second away from winning that match with Omega, and then absolutely blitzing the Dark Order to bits, you know, like destroying every one of those. He comes in and he's just so full of confidence, but he doesn't realize just how deep the water is with Adam Page until it's too late. And then you get like this mad flurry in the last 20 minutes after he realizes what's going on. And of course, you've got Adam Page as well fighting against the greatest wrestler in the world and against a guy who is just running red hot and firing up and, you know, ultimately ending up slightly on top. Kind of like, you know, just on top. Time is the enemy in this. And like for both of these men in this match, like they feel like they've got so much time, particularly Danielson, like he's, you know, showboating, he's doing these star jumps, and time is something he feels like he's got so much of until it becomes his absolute mortal enemy. And the second that like that clicks, it's incredible.
Oh, it is absolutely astounding. It's like, watching it live, you got the feeling that it was going to go for the full hour. However, because they kicked off the show with it, like, it wasn't, you weren't looking at, because of course me and Sam, we watched it like the day after, so we're not watching it live. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you'll like, just see, oh, how long's left? And with this match, because they kicked it off, you couldn't do that because it kicked off the show.
Yep.
So it didn't matter. It's like, oh, such a great... Because I know that decision has come under fire, but for us people who don't watch it live, that really helps with the investment. You kick off the show with your big match, because that means that I've got no idea like where this is going to finish. But oh, just the journey they took us on. Right, this was in that... The novelty had not worn off of Bryan Danielson in AEW yet. It was still in that honeymoon period. And this match
It hasn't worn off for me yet. I wanted to come back as soon as possible.
Oh, man. To think we've got two more years, or two and a half more years for Bryan Danielson in this company. Like, my God.
At least. More.
But, yeah, this was a sublime match, and Danielson's not only sublime match, he is all over these top like 20, especially with these singles matches.
Yeah,
and this match with Adam Page for me was absolutely, I also voted it third. I voted it higher than it's finished. This was amazing, and for me it was the, because I said that the previous match that we talked about was their kind of moment of making Hangman like the champion, right? They've done it, they stapled it. But this match was elevating Page to Danielson's level, so that when they go at it, they're at a much more level playing field. They both know what they're expecting at this point. And Sam put it perfectly. This was just a 40 minutes of Brian Danielson being a bit of a dickhead. Just like, oh, I'm going to dick all over this lad. I've got him. He's dead. Look at me doing the thing where he's posing with the muscles. Like, oh, yeah, yep. I can tease. I can do whatever I want. Mm. He was in the build-up to it. He was stamping the heads in of the Dark Order guys. Just the key point being that the thought originally was this was going to be Moxley's spot. Then Moxley had to drop out and go to rehab, and then you see Danielson pretty much take the booking that he had, because again, when you control everything, you can do. It's not that difficult to set up nice little bits in the world, like your dates don't come out of nowhere. You organize them, so they'd organized it so all of their dates matched a hometown of a Dark Order member. It was like, oh, God, it's so good. Danielson then beating the crap and stamping all of the heads of every single one of them, knocking the teeth out of them on his way to Adam Page. It's just, oh, it was such a good way to build up Danielson. And then he had that same attitude going into the match. But this was them, as Sam put it, this was him slowly realizing how deep the waters go for Adam Page. And you got to see him dig deep. And for me, there's a reason that I voted this match higher. For me, it had so much character work to it in that elevation. And those final 20 minutes are absolutely incredible.
I loved the selling from Adam Page. Like, there was a moment in this match where I genuinely thought he had a concussion. And I was, like, worried about what was going to happen, because they're in this championship match. It's, like, big stakes, these two great wrestlers. And I was genuinely worried about what was going on. But it just made his comeback feel so much more monumental. And then as you get, like, the race against time in the final 10 minutes. And I love the fact that it went for a draw as well. Because not only did it set up a second incredible match, but... like, there's something legendary about 60-minute draws when they're done well. And for a championship as well, like, for me, this had, like, echoes of Okada Omega, the 60-minute match they had, echoes of Steamboat and Flair, the 60-minute draws they had. Like, a Broadway is something special, and this was such a perfect first defense for Adam Page to set him up as just, like, this fighting champion. This guy who was beaten down so hard by the best wrestler in the world. Like, the most vicious, the most technically adept, the most brutal and ruthless pro wrestler in the world. He took the beating and he was able to come back and survive it. And then he was able to win in the second match. He was able to take what he'd learned and apply it and win that second match. Incredible set of matches for these two. And it set Hangman Page up for, I think it's probably the best, like, the best reign from an in-ring perspective that we've had in AEW so far. You know, I love Moxley, love Kenny Omega, love Chris Jericho. They all had great, like, different aspects to their reign that was really strong. But I think, like, from a pure in-ring perspective, like, Hangman's reign was the best, and the centerpiece of it, I feel like, is these two matches. And speaking of AEW championship matches, let's move on to third place. Kenny Omega versus Hangman Adam Page for the AEW World Championship Full Gear 2021. This one ended up with 380 points, 34 people voted for it, and it received 7 first place votes. When you're talking about AEW and the first 3 years of AEW, which is kind of what we're doing in the Definitive Match Guide, this is the story of AEW, right? Like, Kenny Omega versus Adam Page has been a thread that has been there. And Adam Page's trek to the championship has been a thread that has been there since, I would argue, the moment they announced AEW at the Tokyo Dome back on New Year's Day in 2019, on the stroke of midnight. The Young Bucks and Cody turned their phones around and had Double or Nothing. But Hangman said, hey guys, mine has something different on it, and turns his phone around. It's got AEW. And of course, at the press conference a few days later, Adam Page announces that he wants to become the first AEW champion. You're going to have to stop me, because I'm about to launch into a 2-hour-long podcast about Adam Page's trek to become the champion. But that just shows how passionate I am about this story. You know, I mentioned before that Punk versus MJF was one of the best stories for the last you know, in the last whatever in wrestling, but I honestly think this is probably pretty close to being the best. There's lots of been lots of great stories, but for my take, like in terms of the length and the depths of storytelling, the way they fleshed out the characters, and then of course the way they paid it off in ring, it's you know, you'd be pretty. I mean, there'd be people who'd argue with you, but like you wouldn't be too far off saying that this is one of the best.
This is the proof of concept for AEW's entire point of existing, all coming to fruition. The way that they want to build their stars and tell their stories, this was them putting the trigger on how they want to do it and put all of the dice on this, on it working. Obviously, you can read the room over a 3-year-long period to see if it's working. Mm. But Jesus Christ, did this work. It felt like Adam Page's special night. This was all for him.
Yep.
But the thing that helps is the fact they already had him fail, and his entire story was him overcoming failure. And obviously, there were of this match coming out of it. I remember there were quite a few detractors going, "Oh, it was obvious." It's like, well, no, that's called foreshadowing and telling you. Yeah. It's good
story. Telling a logical story.
Yeah. It's like no. Yes, some people confuse foreshadowing with, "Oh, that was predictable." It was like, no, it wasn't predictable. They told you it was going to happen, and then they did it because they told you it was going to happen. That is, it's basic storytelling stuff, and we're just not used to seeing it, especially over such a long period of time. This exists in storytelling all across television, all across media, stories, whatever, but not in wrestling, because the way WWE has told storylines has been a lot more short-term. And of course, you see it every now and then with the memes of, I'll applaud Gareth with the long-term storytelling. He got a shout-out on this one. But it's become a bit of a meme on social media where you see people offer both sets of companies showing that this is long-term storytelling at its best, or you'll see it in WWE where they do something. It's like, look, this was long-term storytelling. They set this up a couple of months ago. It's like, no, no, that's not what we mean, but fine.
Or they'll set up like, oh, they did this one thing 2 years ago, and now they're referencing it again. But in between that, like, there hasn't been anything to do with it.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas, like, Adam Page's trek to the championship has been something that has, like, and this feud between him and Kenny Omega has been something that has informed every single thing he has done in AEW. And for Kenny Omega as well, like, his ultimate destiny to be the one that got beaten by Adam Page was set up, you know, really early on as well, when they started tag teaming together. And even when like the Young Bucks said they don't, you know, they only corner Kenny Omega in big matches. They don't corner Adam Page, which of course like paid off beautifully when they finally courted Hangman Page at the end of this match. They came out, they didn't interfere. And they finally cornered Adam Page and gave him the nod and said, "You can do this." And that was the juice that he needed just to finally finish off the match. And, you know, like, we've talked about the story, but, like, not enough gets said about this match as well. You know, this match, it wasn't, you know, Kenny Omega versus Kazuchika Okada. And there's many reasons for that, but it was still a really great match. Like, this was still incredible. These guys have incredible chemistry. When they work together, they both hit hard. They've both got speed and lots of athleticism, and they know each other so well. So their sequences are so, you know, really flawless. And I loved that Hangman Page pulled out the one-winged angel in this. and you've got things like that happening. And of course, Kenny Omega's classic offense, like his blitzkrieg of the V-triggers and the snapdragons, it's always just a joy to watch those get done. And because these two are together and they've got such incredible chemistry, when it hits, like, they really hit each other. And it hits so well. And then, of course, as I said, like, brilliant ending to the actual match itself with the Bucks coming out. And Hangman hits two buckshots on Kenny to get the win and win the championship.
It's even more incredible to think about with knowing now that at the time Kenny Omega had was suffering from extreme vertigo,
and his shoulder and the rest of his body that was just broken down.
Like, he was having this level of match, when he was struggling that much. That is absolutely insane.
This is for 99% of wrestlers ever, this is a career performance.
Yeah. And he was that hurt. He was struggling that much. Like, absolutely incredible. And like, for me, in terms of like the night as a whole, just again, you could sense it was Hangman Page's night. The video that played beforehand of him walking in the streets. He wasn't walking. He was riding a goddamn horse. It was absolutely fantastic. But then Kenny Omega comes out with, he's doing the whole belt collector gimmick as well. So as in, this is a champion. And he got Don Callis next to him, just presenting him as such. Like, look at this man. He's on commentary going, look how incredible he is. He is the pinnacle of wrestling. Just putting across that. And then Hangman Page, the fan favourite. And
he had some gold on his gear as well for the first time. Previously, it's always black and silver, and he wore black and gold. Nice touch.
Nice touch.
Which is also like, it was a storytelling beat, like a symbol of his confidence. Because, you know, previously he didn't have the confidence to, you know, like really make his intentions clear with the championship. But, you know, he's going into this match wearing gold, like he's signaling. And, you know, it's like the year before at Full Gear, Eddie Kingston goes in wearing Misawa's colors, the green and silver. And, you know, that ends up being too much pressure for him to take. And he ends up losing. But Paige, he goes in wearing gold and he can take it. And that shows how far he's come.
I was saying, it's so difficult to not accidentally just enter a full episode of the Match Guide podcast. This one, it's like, I feel like we've hardly scratched the surface of what I want to talk about. I guess we're going to have to move on, even though I've got so much to say.
Yeah, you can start hosting the podcast. So coming in second, we've got... Actually, no. What I might do, because there's two matches left, right? So I might announce the match that came in first, and then we'll talk about the match that came in second. I'll announce the top two. I'm just deciding this on the fly. So, drum roll. The winner of the definitive AEW Match Guide Volume 2 between Double or Nothing 2021 and 2022 is Kenny Omega versus Bryan Danielson from Dynamite Grand Slam, the 22nd of September 2021, which means the match that came in second was the Young Bucks versus the Lucha Bros AEW Tag Team Championship Steel Cage match.
Ray Phoenix still on top. He's measuring. He's deciding. He's thinking about it. Crossbody from the top of the cage.
What the hell?
Out! Mick Jackson is spiked! It's got to be in.
Kick!
403 points, but 33 votes, 8 first place votes. We'll talk about this match first. This felt special from... like the moment that the Lucha Bros had their entrance with, they had an extra rapper. They had a sort of a rapper who came in that doesn't normally do that. And then they came out with the headdresses. As soon as they came out with the headdresses, I was like, oh, they're winning, aren't they? And then the ride began. The ups and downs began. And this is a match that had so many ups and downs and took us to places I didn't think we would go to. You talk about like matches that if they'd ended, you know, 10 minutes early would have been a great match. But then the final 10 minutes just transcends it into just the best things ever, like the utter greatness, legacy greatness. This match was one of those for me. What are your thoughts on this match, Imp?
Oh, I voted it number one. This was my match of the year, favourite match. This was absolutely incredible. Also, the guy who wrapped them out was Mikey Ruckus, who does all the music for AEW.
Was that Mikey Ruckus? Good on him.
So he,
that was an awesome entrance.
Oh, well, there was Mikey and there was someone else as well.
There was another rapper too.
Yeah. I don't know who he was. Like an older chap. I have no idea who he was. Yeah, and he wasn't.
It felt cool though. Like it had a different air to it because of that.
Oh, 100%. And it was. And apparently Chris Jericho applauded him afterwards for doing an amazing job. But he was. Yeah, it really set the tone. And I love it when they get those special entrances to really make it feel like a huge match, a special thing. I guess the other one would be Britt Baker versus... Oh, who was she facing when they got... Oh, it's Ruby Soho, that was it. Revolution with their special entrances. The musical entrances, they really make it special. And this was something else. Because we'd already had the Young Bucks Lucha Bros, like, big spot fest matches, like them doing the crazy stunts, what are they going to do next? Kind of sublime stuff like that finished high on last year's list. But the reason this is number one is because, well, they'd already done that. So this time they get to tell a story. It's like, oh, and that's the thing that elevates it. It's just, this isn't just them putting on a good wrestling match and it's got cool spots in it. It's like, no. This one got the story, and that's why this one finished higher than their awesome spot fest one. Like, this, it meant so... You could see it as the match progressed, just the fans got really behind the Lucha Bros. They couldn't wait to see the dickhead Young Bucks get their asses kicked as they had the shoes with the thumbtacks on it. Matt Jackson taking his shoe off and licking it. just licking the thumbtacks, like the crazy person. The dastard level they're willing to go to.
Yeah, the image of Pentagon, like, with his mask ripped and blood dripping from his face is just, like, such an incredible, such an incredible image. And, you know, like, these guys have got, you know, the sort of storylines, I guess, that go through all of their matches where you've got, like, the rivalry, the brotherly rivalries where you've got, you know, Phoenix and Nick, you've got Penta and Matt as the older brothers versus and the younger brothers, and quite often they end up going off, and then you kind of end up with like a in a lot of their matches you end up with almost a game of dare or a game of chicken where they're like, are you gonna do that to your brother? Well, I'll do this to your brother if you do that to my brother, you know. and they had that coming into this match, and of course it ends in an utterly insane way with Rey Fénix diving off the top of the steel cage to get the victory. And yeah, Pentagon embracing his daughter with blood coming out of his face. You know, yeah, incredible action, really cool story and character stuff. Just images and you remember for, you know, as a wrestling fan, you just won't forget, like, as you said, them having the thumbtack covered shoe and the licking of it. And then, yeah, as I said, Pentagon's mask just ripped. And the final dive off the cage. AEW's cages are huge, and every time someone goes off it, even though it's been done a few times now, my heart's in my mouth.
I think was Cody Wardlow the first time they did a steel cage match?
Yep.
I just remember just seeing the height of it as Cody stood on top. I was like, no. Like, I know what you're going to do. I know you're going to do the moonsault spot, but this feels so high. okay. Such a good match. And it, not to forget, like, when they're doing like the back and forth wrestling inside, you've got Ray, you got the sequences are so quick because you got Nick Jackson and Ray Fénix as well, and they got in order, like, you can do the, I can't believe they actually did the spot where they do the super kick, Fénix goes down and immediately springboards and hits his own kick. It's just like, oh
yeah,
such good spots, so many really quick sequences where we're taking each other down. And yeah, as we're talking about, just the level that they showed the Young Bucks willing to go to just bloodify. It's not a word, but you know what I mean. the Lucha Bros. But the Lucha Bros didn't give up. They kept fighting back, and the crowd got so behind them. They were so hot. The way that they played this match, you can't not just be so behind the Lucha Bros as the Young Bucks do these, you sick fuck little things about the match. I was like, there's a reason this was my number one match. Like, 2 years in a row, Young Bucks have got my match of the year from this definitive list. Sublime stuff.
But it wasn't the number one match for the definitive match guide. We need to move on to that.
Paul Turner called for the pin. Here we go. Let's get after this thing. What a great match. These guys can hear it as well as we can. The fans are on their feet. They're loving this. And these two men have yet to lock up.
My God, what anticipation.
New York is AEW country. You can hear it.
It earned 484 points. So it was a pretty clear winner, even though it wasn't, you know, the number one wasn't quite as runaway this as last year. In the end, it ended up a pretty clear winner. Got 37 votes. The most for any of the matches that got votes. And it had 12 first place votes and 11 second place votes. So it was one that was really beloved by the people that loved this match, really loved it. It was weighted very highly in the first and second votes. And then you've got mostly third, fourth, fifth, and sixth votes. You know, the people who voted for this match voted highly on it, which is why it's won. I love this match. This was my number one, actually. Sorry, Imp. and this is another one we reviewed, actually, on your... We did the Dynamite Grand Slam Dynamite review afterwards. I love a few things I really enjoyed about this match. Of course, the spectacle. Just the giant crowd that they had and the setup they had at Arthur Ashe Arena. It's such... Tennis courts are an incredible arena for wrestling because the court is not that much bigger than a wrestling ring, so you've only got a few rows before you start getting the towering rows of seats going up into the grandstands, which is such a cool look. And of course, I really loved how ruthlessly Kenny Omega targeted Bryan Danielson's head. This was Bryan Danielson's first match in AEW, and of course, everyone knows his history with concussions, and I love how they played into that. Like, Kenny Omega gave him some brutal-looking V-triggers. There was one where he, like, launched himself down the ramp. I think he, like, jumped halfway down the ramp. And to just deliver this V-trigger to Danielson's head, he dropped him on his head with a few suplexes. And it just made Danielson look like a hero in so much peril. And, of course, he was able to fight his way back in, showing that, like, he can match it with the best in the world, because Kenny Omega at this point, he had lost the TNT, the Impact title to Christian, you know, someone who was clearly at the top of AEW, the top of the food chain at AEW, and Danielson was able to match him for 30 minutes. And I love the ending for this, where the bell rang and they didn't even stop. They just kept on going as if, like, they were so wrapped up in the contest and their egos and their arrogance, like, not their arrogance, but their egos and competitive drive was so wrapped up that they just wanted to keep going. And they had to be, like, ripped apart by the people running into the ring, you know, the super elite and whoever else got in the ring at that point. You know, and this is a worthy winner. This wasn't, you know, I think the title Dream Match gets tossed around probably a bit too liberally, but this actually was one. Like, this is something that genuinely was a dream match. It was ballsy for them to make this the first match that they did with Danielson, knowing what we know now about Kenny Omega and his injuries. He probably knew he was going away, so he probably told TK that, and that's why they did it, because they were like, we do it now or we might never. And I'm so glad they did, because this was an incredible spectacle that was matched by the intensity that these two wrestlers wrestled at.
So I remember at the time just having the argument, I can't remember even before, after the match, just having the argument of why this was such a good match to put on. Because I remember at the time, the criticisms of, well, no, you build to a match this big. Like, obviously, in the vacuum of us not knowing about Kenny's injuries.
Yeah.
It's just, you're like, oh, you build to this match. You don't put on a match. You don't just put it on. I was told AEW would all build to their things. And I remember just saying to those people, like, this is the build. As in, they're going to have a 30-minute banger and they're going to hold back. It's match of the year and they held back.
Yeah, we didn't even get like an ending stretch for these guys.
Yeah, this was just 30 solid misses. 30 solid match minutes of an absolutely solid match. Nothing misses. I meant to say all three of the words, said them in the complete wrong order. It's fine. Like, oh my God, it was absolutely incredible. And this was them at like 50%, which is insane. Like, match of the year, and they didn't even get the 30-minute stretch. But this was the advertisement for the match. This was a dream match, where the entire point was, this is the advertisement. Obviously, it helped them sell out. Did they sell out Grand Slam even without this announced? I'm trying to remember.
Oh, I'm not sure.
I can't remember the running order. But... Yeah. It's a big match, a dream match to help sell out their biggest stadium that they've done. And it did sell out. They released more tickets and they sold out. Like, Arthur Ashe was absolutely packed. It was white hot for this. Set AEW up to run the stadium again this year, which is amazing to see. And it's like, oh, wow. It's a perfect venue for it, as we were saying. Just the atmosphere was incredible. Just seeing AEW run in an arena this big as well. It was a great sight to see, and oh, it's such a good match. So good. And obviously, I put it as number two. I was one of the 11 people that voted it second. But I for me, it was interchangeable.
Lots of people voted it second. 11 people voted it second. So, yeah, you're not alone.
Oh yeah. I mean, again, we're splitting hairs here. Like, number one and number two are... they are both the match of the year. It's just... some other people... Again, with this match, we're talking 12 and 11 for first and second votes. Yeah. Like, that tells you that both of these matches were the match of the year. It's just which way did you split hairs? Do you prefer fantastic tag team wrestling or fantastic singles wrestling? And this year, the singles won out.
Yeah, look, I think we'll leave it at that, talking about these matches. because, of course, at some point in the coming weeks and months, I will be relaunching season two of the AEW Match Guide. I've actually recorded the debut episode. It's with Rich Ladder, and it is looking at the match that came first in the original Match Guide. We're looking at Kenny Omega and Hangman Adam Page versus the Young Bucks from Revolution 2020. And that is a really good podcast. So I'm not sure exactly when it'll be coming out. I want to get a few in the can from this list as well. So I'll be furiously working to get that going. If you want to follow me, you can follow me on Twitter. I'll be announcing when that will happen. Before we get into, before we close off the podcast, though, I wanted to just quickly mention a couple of things with statistics from the AEW Match Guide. And an interesting way of looking at who was potentially like the wrestler of this year for AEW. Imp, if I was going to, you've probably seen this looking at it. So I'll just run down the points. What I did was I took all of the points that were earned by wrestlers for this, and I created a top five. And number five, the fifth, and this includes tag teams as well. Number five was the Young Bucks. That surprised me, honestly. I thought they would be higher. They actually had the most matches in the list of any act, but they obviously spread their votes as opposed to, you know, being potentially concentrated at the top. So their average number of points per match was lower. But they had 10 matches that got votes. And then coming in at fourth was CM Punk. He had 8 matches, totaling 778 points amongst all of his. Number three, which is pretty incredible considering he was only around for like half of it, is Kenny Omega, who ended up with 954 points. He had 6 matches, so his average is pretty high. Then number two is Hangman Adam Page, who came in. He also had 6 matches that received votes. And he had 1,200 points. And then Bryan Danielson is the top wrestler in terms of points earned with 1,571 points. Of course, all of the top 10, you'll be able to read full commentary about them all tomorrow on Wrestling Headlines. Or if you're listening to this, not straight away, then it will already be up on Wrestling Headlines, along with the rest of the top 50. I strongly encourage you check them out. And I wanted to give another big thank you to all of the people who submitted votes, all the people who have shared the list on social media, the Definitive Match Guide on social media, and everyone who has listened today as well. I appreciate having you along for this ride. And as I said, I cannot wait to get into season two of the AEW Match Guide at some point down the line and deep dive into this new slate of matches, as well as some old ones that I've already had a look at and I've got people down for as well. So I'm keen. I hope you're keen. And Imp, are you keen?
Well, we nearly entered Match Guide territory multiple times. Stopped ourselves. Yeah, I'm keen.
But where can the good people find you, Imp?
So you can find me on Wrestling Headlines as well, with my column that I'm trying to put out every Sunday. I failed this week because Money in the Bank was on a Saturday. We'll see. I need to figure out how to do it. How do I? Because I do Aftershock immediately following the pay per views for AEW and WWE as well on Wrestling Headlines YouTube channel, and figuring out how to get my weekly column that I post on a Sunday out on a day when I'm up till like 5-6 a.m. on a Saturday night covering the pay-per-views. So it's I need to figure out how to do it. The answer is probably get it out, get it all written before I watch it. Something like that. But yeah, you can also follow me on Twitter at the Damn Implicate, as I started the show. That's Damn as in Damn. And I'm trying to embody Chono when I do that. Masayo Chono's going Damn and then slapping someone. That's <sounds. laughs> But yeah, you can follow me on Twitter there. Also for Wrestling Headlines, you can follow them on Twitter at Vessel Headlines. That's Vessel without an E. And over on their Facebook page as well for the latest Wrestling Headlines news. And I think that's all my plugs. I think that's everything.
Yep. And look, as I said before, thank you for listening. If you have enjoyed what you've listened to today, you can like or subscribe. You can subscribe to it, or you can like, rate and review it as well. That really helps, actually, if you rate and review it. It helps get the word of it out there so that when people are looking for wrestling podcasts, they can potentially find this one. So I'd really appreciate it if you could do that on whatever podcast platform you use. You can also support the show financially on redcircle.com.au. If you're listening to the podcast, there will be a link in the podcast notes on how you can do that. And that's just money that goes towards hosting, paying the bills here at the Social Suplex. Of course, it is brought to you by the Social Suplex Podcast Network. There's lots of shows on the Social Suplex Podcast Network that delve into all sorts of all the different parts of the wrestling world. And you can listen to all of the shows on the Social Suplex feed or their individual feeds. Of course, you've got One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, covering New Japan, The Grave Consequences, which look at Lucha Underground, a sort of historical podcast, AEW Match Guide, which is this one, the best one. No, All About All Elite, which is our weekly AEW show, which kind of looks at the up-to-date things on AEW and the recent goings-on, reviews Dynamite, Rampage, etc. So make sure you check out the Social Suplex. And as I said, follow me on Twitter, Sir_Samuel, for any updates to this podcast. Or if you hit subscribe, when we do get Season 2 together and launched, it will come straight to your podcast feed. I've got nothing more to say. My voice is about to give out. Imp, have you got anything else you'd like to say before we head out today?
An incredible list, setting up Year 2 of the Match Guide podcast absolutely wonderfully. Every single match on this list is great, obviously, but the top 10 is something else. Like when Sam's...
Absolutely banger.
Like Sam, when Sam put out the first column of this, I just retweeted it going, I know the top 10. Last year, I thought the list was incredibly solid. I thought it was amazing. Mm. This year feels like it's something else. You look at this list and you're like, oh my God, match of the year, amazing stuff, didn't make the top 10. Like Eddie Kingston, yep. Bryan Danielson didn't make the top 10.
Yeah,
we've not been able to talk about Minoru Suzuki versus Bryan Danielson, which aired free on YouTube. Yeah. there has been so much. I remember watching the year as it went ahead, just thinking that this year has been so solid that the top 10 is going to be absolutely incredible from AEW, and this proves it. This is scientific proof that the AEW's match of the year list is incredible. It's insane. And like even next year's one, like we're kicking off with Double or Nothing and then Forbidden Door. Jesus Christ, they're not slowing down.
Yeah, we've got like Will Ospreay versus Orange Cassidy. Yeah. And the Blood and Guts match that just happened. Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot. There's a lot. But it's a great project. And as I said, thank you to all the people who contributed, people I shouted out to before. Go read what they've said in the top 10. You've heard me and him drone on about it. Listen to what they've written about it. Thank you for listening. And I will bid you all adieu, goodbye, and good night. Bang. And I will see you when the podcast relaunches for Season 2 of the AEW Match Guide podcast. Bye.